Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Papadopoulos. Welcome to The Psychology Behind. This week's episode is sponsored by Chrysalis Counseling Training Courses. On The Psychology Behind, every week we explore an issue that's affecting you and we use the science of human behavior to break that issue down and to give you some tips on how to cope. This week, I'm talking about mind hacks for eating behavior. Now, weight loss is usually seen as having to do with numbers, right? So, I don't know, how many calories you consume, how many you burn, the ratio of protein to fat, what you weigh. The truth is, however, that our weight has a lot more to do with our emotions, the way that we feel about food, the way we use it to comfort ourselves, console, even harm ourselves. It has to do with the rhythm and habits that we've gotten into in terms of the way that we shop and the way that we eat and when we eat and how we eat and with who we eat. It has to do with how food plays into our relationships and social situations, and also how psychological stress impacts on the way that our body responds to food. So when you want to get healthier and change the way you eat, it's not so much the math that's important, but rather, I think, the psychology. One of the ways that psychology affects the way we eat is through stress. Now, we know that stress hormones and the effects of high-fat, sugary comfort foods push people to eat more. The interesting thing is that in the short term, stress lowers appetite, right? So when we're feeling really anxious, we don't really want to eat. And that's because our hypothalamus releases hormones which actually suppress appetite. At the same time, the stress response often triggers that kind of fight or flight response, which means that our adrenal glands, they pump adrenaline, and that puts sort of eating on hold, right? So that's why sometimes we feel that kind of nauseous stomach and we're like, oh, I'm too worried to eat. However, and this is the interesting thing, in the long term, it's a completely different story, because if we continue to feel anxious or stressed, then those adrenal glands release the stress hormone cortisol, and cortisol actually increases appetite. So a person's stress response stays high, and then cortisol stays high, and then you kind of have that circular reaction. Now, to make matters worse, there's research out there that shows that stress can affect the food that we prefer to eat, with many studies finding that emotional distress increases the intake of food that's high in fat, high in sugar, or both. So when we eat fatty, sweet foods, they can inhibit activity in the parts of the brain that produce and process emotional stress. So part of our craving for those foods may be that they counteract stress. So researchers have shown that people who respond to stress with high cortisol levels in experimental settings are actually more likely to snack in response to day-to-day stress than low cortisol responders in real life. And I think this is an interesting thing, because we all have friends that kind of say things like, oh, I lose weight when I'm anxious and distressed, whereas you may feel that the exact opposite happens to you. And I think this is precisely the reason why. This is sort of the psychophysiology behind it. Now, we also know, of course, that stress impacts on other health behaviors, right? So when we're stressed, we don't sleep as well, we stop exercising, we're more likely to drink alcohol. And of course, all of these things can compound weight gain as well. So if you really want to get on top of weight gain, on top of what you're eating and how you're eating, then it's really important that you're not only just making the right diet and exercise choices, but that you're also getting on top of your psychology. And here are a few tips on how to help you do just that.
We know you're a good listener. You listen to this podcast. You've listened to Dr. Linda speak on anxiety, how to boost your self-esteem, and being able to manage your time effectively. Well, now we need you to keep listening, because we want to ask you two questions. Firstly, do people often say that they trust you and your advice? And secondly, do you want a career that can make real positive changes in the lives of others? Then becoming a counsellor could be the right choice for you. Chrysalis Courses offer fully accredited part-time course options that are flexible around your commitments, meaning you could become an accredited counsellor or hypnotherapist in just 3 years and earn between £30 and £60 per hour as per the National Careers Service website. So, if you're looking for a new career or one that will fit around your busy life, All you have to do is search Chrysalis Courses online today and take the first steps towards your new career in counselling.
Number one, stop emotionalizing food. Now, emotional eating is the idea that our emotions, not our hunger, affects the way we eat. Now, we've already touched on how stress impacts eating, and experiments have suggested that people are more likely to reach for sugary and high-fat snacks. In fact, they're more likely to prefer to snack rather than have a proper meal. They're more likely to eat fewer vegetables when people are in a bad mood or they're stressed. Interestingly, I remember years ago, I was working on a show in the US called Fit Club, and what we'd do is we'd take people who'd gained weight, and we'd look at what psychological barriers there were to kind of helping them lose weight. I remember working with a lovely woman who'd gained a lot of weight, and it was clear that she was eating emotionally. I remember just picking out foods and asking her to tell me the first word that came into her mind. So I'd pick up chocolate and she'd say things like, oh, love and sex and you know, just comfort. And then I'd pick out crisps and she'd say stress and agitation and anger. And then I'd, you know, I'd pick up vegetables and she'd say, meh, boredom. And it was really interesting because what was happening is that she'd associated certain foods with certain states of mind. So when she was stressed, instead of dealing with a problem, calling a friend, getting support, going for a run, she'd eat crunchy crisps. She did salty foods. That was her go-to. When she was feeling low, instead of trying to think about what was going on, restructuring her thoughts, trying to get advice from someone around her, doing something that she, you know, that made her feel good, exercising, she would reach for the high sugary, high fat foods. And it wasn't until she was able to make that connection between, I guess, in effect, medicating with food and actually using the right things to address the emotions, the difficult emotions she was feeling. It wasn't until she made that connection that she was able to lose weight. So I think it's really important that people substitute proper coping mechanisms to deal with emotion rather than just medicating with food. We know bad moods make you eat bad stuff. So you need to ensure that when you're treating a mood, you're not doing it with food. Number two, you probably don't know when you're full. Now, it's not just the feeling of hunger that tells us when we've had enough. Other things like the size of the plates we eat on, the portion sizes, even the color of crockery has been shown to have an impact on how much food we consume. In one of the most famous studies to demonstrate this, Wansink and his colleagues had some people eat out of a soup bowl that was secretly being filled from under the table. Now, there was another group that were served their soup in a normal soup bowl. Those eating out of the secret refilling bowl ate almost twice as much soup and reported feeling no less hungry or full than the group that just ate half as much out of the normal bowls. So in effect, what this tells us is that while our stomachs may give us some cues about how satiated we are, we also rely on our vision and our eyes are easily fooled. In fact, researchers have also shown that when the same amount of food is served on smaller dishes, people report feeling fuller and more satisfied faster. And probably because the food fills up the smaller plate and makes it look more abundant, we don't feel hard done by not having enough. Doing the opposite, i.e. eating out of a really big plate, causes us not only to eat bigger servings, but can also make us feel like we haven't eaten very much, which can lead, of course, to further eating after that. So get into the habit of using smaller crockery. It can help you feel fuller, or better yet, try serving healthier foods like fresh vegetables on larger plates so you eat more of the good stuff while eating less of the healthy stuff on the smaller plate so you feel satisfied with less. Number three, think about what you see and think about what you eat first. Try making the stuff you want to eat more easily accessible. So if, for example, you keep a jar of candy on your desk at work, try replacing it with, I don't know, a bowl of grapes or some nuts. It's a basic hack, but a really key one. We tend to eat what is most accessible. So keep the good stuff nearby and the less healthy stuff, either get rid of it or keep it far away. Along the same lines, researchers have also found that the food that you start your meal with can influence your subsequent choices. choices. So opting for like a salad at the beginning of your meal as a starter means that you'll more likely choose a healthier main course. So in effect, it kind of triggers a healthy mindset. And so you'll find it easier to make better food choices throughout your meal. Number four. Call yourself a healthy eater. Now, according to a 2016 study in the Journal of Self and Identity, people who identified with a particular role, so calling yourself a healthy eater means it's much more likely to be one. You know, just the notion that you identify as something means that you kind of set up your mind to be sort of congruent with those traits. In a similar vein, a while back, researchers found that when someone was offered food, they were told to say either, I can't have it, or I don't want it. Those people that said, I can't have it, often caved in and would eat the food that was bad for them. But those that said, I don't want it, found it much easier to make healthy food choices. So the language that we use around food is really important too. So beware of the language and beware of how you think about yourself. The more positive you are with these things, the easier it will be to make healthy choices. Number five, slow down. When you eat, try and do it mindfully. Put your fork down between mouthfuls and think about what you're eating. Not only does this allow you to eat more slowly and chew properly, which is better for digestion, but it also gives your body a chance to register that it's being fed and to signal to the brain when you are full. In fact, research has shown that eating too quickly actually causes overeating because the stretch receptors in the stomach and our digestive hormones aren't given the time they need to signal to the brain that we've had enough. In fact, we can take up to 20 minutes for your brain to register that you're full. So slow down and give your body a chance to tell you when you've had enough. Remember that by paying more attention to what you're eating, not only will you avoid overeating, but you'll also enjoy it more. And finally, I realize I've already given you five tips, but there's so many wonderful tips here. I had to give you one extra. Number six, don't use food as a distraction. You know the drill. You need to start drafting that report or getting on top of your chores, but you decide that a quick trip to the kitchen for a snack might help postpone the inevitable. Don't do it because it's not about hunger. It's about procrastination. So many of us eat in response to procrastination. We eat because we want to put something off. Try not to do that. Instead, tell yourself that you'll get on with the task at hand. And if you still want the snack that you've decided that you want, you'll have it at a specified time. The thing is that in most cases, if you can get past that initial craving to procrastinate, you won't want it after all. Well, I hope you find this useful. I always love talking about mind hacks that help us in our day-to-day behavior. And I think eating is such a big one. And thank you for all of you that have been sending me ideas for new podcasts. Please keep them coming. You can subscribe to these podcasts on Audioboom, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Until we speak next time, I hope you have a happy, healthy body and mind.